Asian Pop Nation on Sin 90.7.
Welcome to Asian Pop Nation, Sin's flagship show for Asian and diasporic Asian music and pop culture. We open the show tonight with Supernova by aespa, a weird and futuristic and fantastically K-pop song, which has taken up permanent residence in my head this past week. After that was Celebrate by Kepler from their Japanese album Kept Going. My name is Tracy, and tonight I am joined by Xenia, Alicia, Ethan and Annabella as we talk through a veritable smorgasbord of Asian-ish topics. First up, we're doing an overview of all the Asian acts who have announced concerts in Melbourne in the next 4 or 5 months. There are a lot of them, including some huge names. We also let off some steam about the frustration of buying tickets online, inspired by Leisha's recent lack of success with buying tickets to Olivia Rodrigo, Leve and Ive. Following on from that, we hear from Jessie about a concert she went to recently by a Chinese rock band called Baisha Jaws, best known for contributing OST songs to a series called Link Link. And we also talk about the upcoming movie musical Wicked, which is directed by John M. Chu, who also did Crazy Rich Asians. This movie also stars Michelle Yeoh. In this segment, Xenia gets to let her theatre nerd out, and I finally learn what Wicked is about. And finally, we talk about a local community event, the Japanese Festival, held at Box Hill Town Hall just recently. So that's our program for tonight, folks. Time to get back into the songs, which is presumably why you listen to this show. The next one coming up is Algorithm by ITZY. This is a new Japanese release from them. We've just played three songs from Korean artists. That song you just heard was a track by Yoo Da-yeon called Keep It Low. And before that, we played a track from two members of Lovelies, Ryu Soo-jung and Yeyin with Orange Juice. And before that, Algorithm by ITZY, who recently came to Melbourne like a couple months ago, and we actually covered that show on our show. Speaking of live shows, there are actually quite a few concerts coming up featuring Asian artists that are going to be happening in Melbourne. In this segment, we're just going to be running down the list of artists who are going to be coming to this little island in the middle of the ocean, and specifically to the second most popular city in this specific island. We're going to be starting off with Raph Sapira and Priya Raghu, who are actually going to be coming to 170 Russell on the 29th of May. Raph Sapira is a British Punjabi artist and Priya is a Swiss Tamil artist, and we've actually played a lot of her songs on the show before. She's amazing. Check out her last album. It's so good. On the 7th of June, the Q's 5, who are a Taiwanese band, they're called Gaoren in Chinese. They're going to be coming to Margaret Court Arena. A veteran Hong Kong band called Colour, spelled with a K, are going to be at the Corner Hotel on the 21st and 22nd of June. And for the rest of these concerts on the list, I'm going to be passing over to Jessie.
And the next group of artists that are coming down to Little Old Melbourne is Rad Museum, Miso and Taba. They will be performing at the Prince Band Room on the 25th of June. And the next person coming down to Melbourne, who is actually not an artist, but a very well-known comedian, is Ali Wong, and they will be performing at the Palace Theatre between the 12th and 15th of July. The next K-pop group that many of us will probably know very well is G-IDLE, and they will be coming on the 31st of October. No venue info yet.
We also have a bunch of artists who are coming to Melbourne, but all their shows have sold out. This will lead into some of the things we're going to be talking about later, but I thought it was worth documenting these shows anyway, because it's very hype that these huge artists are coming to Melbourne. First up, Ive at Rod Laver Arena on the 25th of July, all sold out. Next, aespa at the same place on the 2nd of September, all sold out. After that, Leve at the Palais Theatre on the 6th, 7th and 9th of September, all sold out. And finally, the big one, Olivia Rodrigo at the Rod Laver Arena, 2 days, the 9th and 10th of October, and all sold out. Gee. Leisha, I heard that you tried to get tickets for all four of these shows and only managed to actually get tickets for one of these shows. Which artist was that?
Wow, called out for losing the ticketing war several times, but yes, I tried to get tickets for all of these artists because I do listen to all of them. And the only one I succeeded was aespa. And that was because they had a pre-sale for a mobile company that I actually use. So that was my only like winning shot. I got in like a pre-sale sort of setting and not in like the full, I guess, actual ticketing war. But every other one, they are sold out for a reason, because everyone in this damn city seems to like every artist ever. Full stop. This is, I have like a whole rant about it. And oh God, this rant has been like, I don't know, amplified after my most recent loss for the Olivia Rodrigo concert. I'm not facing this loss alone. Xenia has tried to score tickets and Annabella as well. We've all tried to score tickets for her specifically. And I think to me, at least, this was like the final straw for me in terms of like, wow, everyone in Melbourne loves every artist. Hey, and I have to fight to the death basically to get any ticket anymore. So painful. What do you think, man? What's your thoughts? Are you still like facing the pain? Because I am.
I can now listen to the Sour album and feel heartbreak and pain because of this. I feel like I can listen to Traitor by Olivia Rodrigo and be like, she betrayed me.
This 21-year-old artist has crushed my heart into a million pieces. Yeah.
And she articulates the feeling perfectly. It's a bit of an issue, honestly. But Alicia, you said off air that you have some theories that perhaps this is post Taylor Swift and Ticketek has been trying to add an element to improve their systems.
Okay, it's like no secret to anyone, full stop, especially if you live in like Melbourne, that we've been having like a big boom in live entertainment in general, especially with concerts. Tracy and Jesse just went through the whole list of artists, Asian artists that are all coming down to Melbourne alone in the span of like a month or so. And that's just like one tiny like sector. This entire year has been like crazy filled with so many concerts happening by big names all across the board. And I think all these ticketing sites have been, I guess, quote unquote, trying to do their best with dealing with all this mass demand 24/7 and, you know, bots and scalpers and all these people that are reselling tickets at insane prices. I feel like, okay, especially post Eras Tour, they've been trying to tackle all those bots and all that stuff by implementing all these new fancy systems when you're trying to buy a ticket. But, oh, I think Olivia's concert, her ticket sale specifically, was like the peak of, I don't think these systems are working. There's just been, I would say, more than average, more than usual, so many people who have been like saying how they could not get into the website because the ticketing website just automatically detects you as like a bot, even though you're like a real person who just happens to be sitting there for 20 minutes. But then in their system, in trying to get rid of all the bots, they think, oh, this person has been oddly waiting for too long, we deem. So let's just give them a full like access denied to the website. And what really sucks is like you get access denied and basically you kind of like can't go back to the entire like ticketing website unless you clear your browser history or you use like an incognito window. And by then that's like time wasted and you're losing chances. The golden ticket to see like Leve or Olivia, it's like shrinking by the second. Each second that's gone, it's just like, oh, I don't know. I mean, Annabella, did you?
How was your struggle?
Yeah, well, how was your struggle? Similar pains?
So I plan to get tickets for not only my friend, but also my 12-year-old sister and her friend. So I really wanted to get tickets mostly for them. But yeah, because I'm talking right now, obviously, I didn't get tickets. I'm like quite new to like buying tickets. I tried with Taylor Swift, it was the first time.
Oh my God.
I did not get in at all, but my friend's like dad got through. And I was able to go to that. But after that, I think like my luck has ran out. I tried for Leve and this. And yeah, my luck. There's no luck. I was at a friend's house and we just had like all our devices. And they all got access denied like one by one. They're all dropping away.
Dropping like flies.
Literally. Yeah. Oh my God. Well,
I guess also it's time to break for some more music. Right now we're going to play actually a few older tracks from the artists who are going to be touring in Melbourne very soon. The first track is an absolute banger from Priya Raghu, which we didn't get to play. This is from her album, I think last year. It's called School Me Like That.
Yes.
Those three songs you just heard were Priya Raghu with School Me Like That, Miso and Rad Museum with Fallen, and finally Accused Five with Mischief. And these are actually all artists who are going to be coming down to Melbourne for tours in the next few months. So if you liked any of those songs, check out those shows. Speaking of concerts, actually one of the members of our team, Jessie, recently went to a concert and she would like to tell us all about it. Is that right, Jessie?
Oh, yes, I did indeed go to a concert. So I went to a concert of a Chinese rock band called Baisha Jaws. I think they're most well known for is doing the theme song or the opening song for the Chinese Donghua / anime called Link Click, which I'm kind of obsessed with. I don't know if you could have tell from past segments of me ranting about that one.
Can confirm. This is Jessie's life and
this is like my peak for concert life, man. They performed at like the Curtin Hotel, which I'm not sure if it's an actual hotel. But anyway, we get into the actual concert portion and we go upstairs to go to the concert. Now, they had two opening acts. The first one was a band called Inujima, and I would describe their music as kind of like a more slower, kind of more mellow kind of rock ballad vibe. I cannot describe genres of music like Tracy can, so that's my best way of describing it. So first opening act, kind of more mellow rock band, love that. And then the next opening act that they had was a band called Neon Wave, and they were a little bit more hype, a little bit more lively in terms of music style. And they played a poop song, which I respect. I did not understand Chinese enough to figure out what the lyrics were really about, but they talked about poop in it, and that's what I'm here for.
How did you know that it was a poop song? Did they introduce it as, hello, this is our poop song?
They said the title and it had poop in it, and then all throughout the song, the chorus was like, 大便,大便. I don't know what it was like. Oh, I don't know what the lyrics attached to that was, but I just heard the word and I was like, it's the poop song. But anyway, that was like one of my highlights from the track that they played. I personally found their singer super duper charismatic. I don't know why. She was very charismatic, and they also had a guy in a beanie and sunnies that looked just peak unbothered. Honestly, goals. But yeah, that was their second opening act. And then we got to the Jaws concert proper, and let me just say, when they came on, the crowd cheered. It was beautiful. I came into this concert wanting to obviously listen to the Link Click song live, but I also listened to some of their tracks aside from the Link Click songs, and I really wanted to see them live as well. And it was so much better live. Like, a rock band live is like one of it's peak. It's beautiful. They were really trying to bring the energy up in that room. And the crowd, they were not responsive at all. During one of their talk breaks, the lead singer was like, hey, I know you guys want to record the moment and everything, but like, you kind of just record it and then put it down and then just enjoy the show, dance and vibe like no one cares, that kind of thing. And they were like, yeah, we'll do that. They did not do that. For the rest of the concert, the crowd was literally like standing there still, phones up, recording. That was basically what I saw. And then me and my group of friends were like literally jumping and hype and everything, and everywhere around us it was just stillness.
I feel like you can open a whole like can of worms about concert etiquette and how like crowds react to like artists nowadays, because I feel like what Jessie mentioned is not like a solely exclusive experience. Like, it feels like nowadays it's becoming more rare, I would say, if you're coming across like a crowd that actually everyone is engaged in just the music and not just like recording for their, I don't know, viral moment or something like that. Not saying that like banishing people that's like, you can't enjoy a concert by recording it the whole time, but also at the same time, there's like a balance of like having that actual realization of like, okay, I'm actually seeing this artist live, let me enjoy it live, you know. And it kind of sucks that happened, Jessie.
Well, speaking of concert etiquette, there was one girl, I'm not gonna name and shame her, but there was one girl that literally pushed in front of my friend multiple times to get to the very front of the concert And she was like the most obnoxious one throughout the entire concert. Like whenever they would have these talk segments, they were kind of like interacting with the crowd a little bit, that kind of thing, asking questions. And she would just yell out the most out of pocket thing. Like, oh my God, I've listened to all your songs. Oh my God. All that kind of stuff.
Oh, they want their YN, their little YN.
And then she got the guitar pick at the end.
Oh, she got the guitar pick.
She got the guitar pick. It was.
Her YN thing actually worked in her favor.
It was insane. Oh, God. She got. That girl aside, rest of the concert was slay. But going back to some of the songs that they played, I would first like to highlight the Link Click song that they played, because obviously that's what I was mainly there for. The one song that I think got them a lot of hype was the Link Click season 2 opening track. But the special thing about that song is that halfway through the song, like first half of the song, pretty normal, slay. And then like halfway through the song, it kind of switches and the guy starts singing backwards. So if you don't know what that means, it basically means that if you played that song in reverse, it would still make sense. Now, initially, I thought that they made that song by the guy just singing normally and then they reversed it with a computer. No, that guy sang it backwards live. They recorded it and then put it into the song. And seeing that live was the most insane thing I've ever seen. Like the crowd was so hyped for that specific moment when the track reversed. And that song is called Vortex. And then another Link Click song that they played was obviously the season 1 opening track of Link Click, which was Dive Back in Time. Other than the Link Click songs that we were obviously all here for, I also liked quite a few of their other Chinese songs. And I might butcher these names, but I'm sure gonna try. One song that they had was Ni Kan Dao Le, and it was really good. It was really good. Oh my God. A Chinese track that I really liked that was a bit more on the mellow side of their tracks was called Ying Zhuan Yang. And then the last song they played, which was actually part of their encore, was Yu Ling Yun, which kind of translates to fish scale clouds. But yeah, that was kind of a mix between like proper like bop your head rock and a bit more like a mellow style. And I really kind of liked that. So to wrap things up, we will be playing a few more songs for you guys, starting off with a very, very suitable song. In case you guys don't know, the premise of Link Click is that they can travel into the photos that people give them. So the next track is called Photograph by Milan Ring.
Hello, this is Asian Pop Nation on Sin. We played Photograph by Milan Ring, The Garden by JHM, and Luna Lee's Confusion Song, because something, I don't know how I'm going to transition this, but...
You're usually the expert in the transition.
I was like, are a bit confused. No, I think it's just we had, I guess, a bit of a gap in news and current affairs, I suppose, in the pop culture, Asian pop culture world. So thought maybe we could talk a little bit about a movie that's not particularly Asian, but kind of is. And that is the film adaptation of the Broadway musical Wicked. I know. Ooh. People are like, what? It's just got Michelle Yeoh in it. How is this Asian? Well, funnily enough, we've got John M. Chu, the director for Crazy Rich Asians and In the Heights, coming to adapt another musical film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's looking like it'll be interesting. And that's why we're going to bring it up today. So for those who are like, what the heck's Wicked? If you've been living under a rock for the past 20 years, Wicked is set in the world of Oz from like The Wizard of Oz. And long before Dorothy arrives in her ruby red slippers and going down the yellow brick road, there is actually another young woman. She's born with green skin called Alphaba. She's like this fiery, misunderstood, smart girl with extraordinary magical talents. And this is all in the trailer. I'm not spoiling anything. But then she meets this bubbly blonde at this university. She goes to Galinda, who is exceptionally popular, and they have this intense rivalry, which then becomes a friendship until, you know, the world of Oz decides to call one of them good and one of them wicked. And it's like almost in a way like the prequel before all of those prequels started. Like, oh, how did Dorothy get those red slippers? Or like, oh, how did the witch become evil? So this is kind of like the backstory.
What is this a prequel to?
Prequel to The Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz, Tracy?
Or the book?
Yeah, read the book. That might need explaining because I
essentially the Wizard of Oz pop culture classic. We've got the Judy Garland. She plays Dorothy. She lives on this farm, and then she has like gets caught up. Her house gets caught up in a tornado, and lands in this magical world of Oz, and kills the Wicked Witch of the East. She steals her ruby red slippers and she goes down this road to try and find the Wizard of Oz to bring her back home. And she runs into this scarecrow, also this tin man and this cowardly lion. And then they meet the wizard and the wizard's like, ha ha ha, I can help you, but you have to go kill the witch first, the Wicked Witch of the West. And so that's kind of what Wicked is the origin of the Wicked Witch of the West and who Dorothy kills, essentially, in quotation marks, in The Wizard of Oz. So it's originally a Broadway production that premiered in around 2003. So it starred the amazing Idina Menzel, still kicking it. Mainly, I guess most people know her as Elsa now. But she's done some great stuff on Broadway. That's where she got her start. And Kristen Chenoweth, with music and lyrics by the legendary Stephen Schwartz of Hunchback of Notre Dame fame, Prince of Egypt, Chanted. He's done probably like the epics of Disney's filmography. And I guess DreamWorks filmography as well. So this upcoming film adaptation directed by John M. Chu stars Cynthia Erivo as Alphaba. She is famous for her Color Purple revival on Broadway. And then there's Ariana Grande, who needs no explanation. If you like Bridgerton, Jonathan Bailey's here. Mr. Anthony Bridgerton as Pierre. He's going to be a prince. You get to swoon all over him.
Let's go! He's
like still a bit of a snarky kind of guy, so paying his stereotype to archetype. Anyway, and then Jeff Goldblum as the wizard. I feel like a lot of people are just going to watch it just for Jeff Goldblum. And Michelle Yeoh as Madame Marrable.
I'm just curious because obviously Crazy Rich Asians and this movie are directed by the same director. Madame Marrable sounds like she could be a similar type of character to her sort of tiger mom character from Crazy Rich Asians. Is she also like a scary headmistress?
She is a bit scary. I think she teaches sorcery at the university and then sees Alphaba's talents and is like, you will be my star pupil and I will tutor you one-on-one. And then, I don't know, spoilers, turns out she's not all that good.
Gagged.
Villain?
Wow. She's kind of like a villain.
With the name Marrable, wow.
Oh, who could tell?
I would have never guessed she would be not so nice after all.
But what I'm curious about is, I think a lot of Wicked, you know, they start songs sing-talking in a way. So I'm curious to hear how Michelle Yeoh goes and I guess, I don't know, if she'll have anything to sing, essentially. Because I think, did she sing anything in like Everything Everywhere all at Once? I think there was like that karaoke scene. No, nothing.
She's not really known for as being a singer. And I guess she does stand out in the cast, seeing as like, obviously, the mains are like really, really good singers.
I'm curious about Jonathan Bailey, though. Can he sing? Leisha from Bridgerton, do you know if he can sing?
Oh, I mean, he does not. No, there's no singing. But I know that man is very talented, trust. So I have faith in my white man of the month.
I guess, Annabella, you've actually played a bit of the music from the musical in orchestra club. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about the music itself and how you think it might translate to film, whether you're like, it's okay, I've played better.
I actually really liked it. I like musicals, so I was excited to play that one. I don't know, it's super fun.
Oh, did you play Popular?
Yeah, there was like Popular, Defy Gravity. I forgot the rest of them. Like The Wizard and I, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of epics in Wicked. So
yeah, I know of like the epics, but I've never seen it. I actually plan to see it sometime in the festival.
Yeah, well, yes! It's still in Melbourne.
It's in Melbourne. So,
yeah, it is. Like, good to like late August. It's like on for a while.
I would definitely recommend, even if you don't like musicals, it's one of the classics to see. And I think it's hard to dislike. It's fun. There's lots of laughs, lots of drama. I think we could, in a similar way to when we talked about In the Heights, and it's not really about Asians, but it's about kind of about the Asian experience. I suppose Wicked is a similar one about a girl who gets ostracized for the way she looks and essentially trying to find friendship in a world that tends to reject you. And trying to find your own identity. So yeah, it's kind of relatable to any outcasts or people who feel like outcasts. Now let's take a break here, but we'll be back with some more Wicked discussion after this. We're just going to hit it with the music, this time with Lobster Telephone by Peggy Goh. This is Asian Pop Nation on Sin. You heard Lobster Telephone by Peggy Goh, Monica Carina's Ponit, and that last one was My Aunt's Guess I Should Have Known, because I suppose you might know, but you probably should have known, that the Wicked trailer for the film adaptation of the famous Broadway musical is out, and we have just been chatting about it. But I believe, Leisha, you had a question?
I mean, I wanted to ask, like, I guess... Yeah, put it for, I mean, obviously with Xenia, girl's been talking about Wicked, she definitely knows the musical, front, back, upside down, everything, and Annabella, who, like, knows the orchestral music for it. I guess for you guys, how do you personally feel? What's your current feelings right now of the film, like, adaptation? Like, have you seen, like, clips from the trailer? Like, you've seen the cast and all that stuff? Like, how are you feeling about it? Are you, like, nervous considering movie musicals are not, like, a new concept? I mean, this year we had, like, Mean Girls, the musical, the movie that just came out earlier in the year. But I guess, like, how are you guys feeling about this one?
I'm just excited and curious to see how it'll all turn out. Because I know it's such a classic. I think it'll be a fun time, like, with Ariana Grande and, like, all the big names.
I think with Wicked, they're at least honest out from the get-go that it's going to be a musical. You can't promote Wicked without being like, yeah, it's going to be an adaptation of the musical. I think what they failed to mention is that it's two parts.
Oh! And...
So that's kind of what they're keeping away from the trailer. So, yeah, I don't know how I feel. I think it's a good choice to have gone, but I've never seen a musical film be split into two parts, but I think maybe they're just banking on Wicked being such an iconic story that people will come back for more. And look, I like Wicked. It's good fun. It was a great watch. I saw it here in Melbourne, but I find the story is very much like how prequels are like today, where like, oh, have you ever wondered how the Tin Man came to be? Oh, here you go. Here's an answer. Do you ever wonder how the Wicked Witch of the West got her hat? Now you know the answer. It's like a lot of those like really pointless backstory. Like, I don't really care, but it's like, ooh, wow. What do you call it? Like a Easter egg.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
like the dedicated musical fans.
Yeah, like it treats the fans really well, but if you're not like a diehard person, it's kind of like, oh, I guess cool, but this is not contributing to the overall plot.
And I think maybe because I hadn't seen the musical before recently, I just know the music. I had already put together in my head what I thought the story was going to be.
Yeah.
And it sounded a lot better, the one that I made up, than the one that I actually saw. This is going into spoiler territory, but when I first listened to all the music, I thought Defying Gravity, like the biggest musical number in the musical, was going to be after she finds out that the wizard is her dad and that he had like been drinking all of these green potions or something, and that's how she ended up being green. Oh. And then she was like, I'm not going to be this man who is like tricking everyone and all that, and I'm going to be myself. She instead, when I watched the musical, it was that she sings Defying Gravity because she realized the wizard is turning all of her teachers mute. Like,
oh,
she has like a goat teacher who now starts just bleating because he can't talk anymore. And then she accidentally makes the flying monkeys, which is a reference to her like minions in The Wizard of Oz. Uh-huh. And I'm like, ooh, her dad being discovered. I'm like, yeah, it's going to break free from this chains of the man who made me, technically, or talking animals. And it just sounded better in my head. I think I had expectations and it just didn't end up being that way. So maybe I would have enjoyed it more, but it's like epic, loved it still. Just felt like, it's like when you come into a story thinking you already have, you know what it's going to be about, you have all these expectations and it's too high for them to go any to surpass it. So yeah,
that plot sounds questionable from what you've told us. I'm also a bit worried because I'm a bit worried that this might be another Hobbit situation where they take source material that is kind of compact and they stretch it out to fit more movies. They're going to take a really thin plot and stretch it out into two movies. I don't know how I feel about that. Well, I know how I feel about that. I don't think it's going to be good. It doesn't give me that much hope. But also, you know, it has Jeff Goldblum in it. It has.
I love how you guys are really banking on the Jeff Goldblum bit. Like, damn. I didn't know y'all were like diehard Jeff Goldblum.
I'm not diehard. I just know the internet is diehard about Jeff Goldblum.
The internet does like him a lot. I saw like this one interview of him. He was just talking to this woman, and people were like, oh my God, why is he so hot like right now? And I'm like, what is going on? I feel like I'm on a different sphere. Like, where's my Jonathan Bailey Naders over here?
I think you'll like Jonathan Bailey's role in this if you watch Alicia. He'll be good.
I'm so ready. Oh my gosh. And obviously I'm so excited for Cynthia and Ariana because they're both like out of the film. Their interaction, like the actual people themselves, they seem so sweet together. Like, they're adorable. Like, they look like they genuinely have like a very cute like sisterhood sort of bond at the moment. I'm like, I hope this translates. And you typically, I feel like if you're like this out of the show, it'll like translate into the film itself. So I'm like excited for how those two are gonna be side by side. I know a few of my friends who are like wicked fans are their main thing that they're really nervous about is Ariana Grande being Glinda. But I know for me, okay, I say this as not like a crazy musical person. My one hyperfixation is Hamilton, unfortunately. But like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes people forget that she literally started out as like in the acting world first before she became the pop sensation Ariana Grande. So I'm like, guys, don't forget. The girl can act and she can sing. So I'm like, if you were going to put one big star name, let it be her and not like, who's, oh God, I was going to name drop.
Name and shame, Leisha. Name and shame.
Who's the British late night talk show host who?
James Corden?
James Corden, yes, oh yes, God. Yeah, yes.
In the Heights.
Yes, James Corden. Oh. Like, I will take 20 billion Ariana Grande castings over one James Corden. I'm glad he's not here in this entire, like, casting. God bless. Instead of, like, him, we've got, I think, in comedy relief, we have Bowen Yang, who's going to be in the film, who is, like, he actually does stuff for SNL and is, like, a comedy writer and stuff, and he's actually funny. Shock. So... So, yeah, I have, like, more hopes about this one, perhaps. I'm keen. Like, I've always just been so interested about Wicked. So, I'm, like, I'm actually quite excited for this film, even though I feel like I should probably consume the original, like, in its musical form first. But, yeah, no, I'm actually quite keen on this one, guys. I don't know.
And it's funny you mentioned the casting choice for, like, with Cynthia and Ariana, because I think they released a behind-the-scenes or feature which showcased their reactions when they heard the news, and they just started crying. Yes. And Ariana was like, I'm going to take good care of her. I love her so much. So it shows, I think, a bit, I think people have a bit more faith now, because of how much it seems like they care about.
Yeah, and I mean, Cynthia comes from, like, Broadway background.
Yeah,
and
I have no doubt.
No, yeah, she's going to mutter it across the board. I just know it already. I don't know what Michelle Yeoh is going to do, and I say this as, like,
she'll
Michelle
Yeoh
Nader, but she will be mother, but, you know, I'm like, scared. What are they going to do, you know? Singing wise, but I guess we'll see when it comes out in November. Damn.
November, still a while. So there's obviously a lot of busy work happening behind the scenes to get Wicked into theaters in November. So we're going to play a song by Sabrina Song called Busy Work here on Asian Pop Nation on Sin.
This is Asian Pop Nation on Sin, where we've just played three Actually, no, scratch that. Only two R&B slow jams. But first, we played Busy Work by Sabrina Song. After that, we played Push It by Vicky Farewell. And finally, Lady by Deb Fan. That last track reminds me a lot of a city pop album from the 80s by Minako Yoshida called Monochrome, which I really like. It has those slow jam, sultry, super slow-mo disco vibes. Speaking of things that are Japanese, we recently had a Japanese festival in Box Hill, a festival that you might not have heard of, but apparently it was very wholesome and very cute. Actually, two members of our team went to this festival, those being Ethan and Jesse.
Yeah, we did go to the Japanese festival at Box Hill. Yes, that happened. So this was held on the 19th of May, which I think is a couple of weeks ago, and it was held at the Box Hill Town Hall. Now, basically what this festival was a celebration of all things Japanese culture. So they had arts and crafts, Japanese food, they had like a model train display, they had bonsai apparently, which I didn't really see. They had live performances, live music. They even had a cosplay competition, and I also think they had a kimono competition or a showcase. I'm not sure if it was a competition, but they had that. And yeah, it was overall a very packed schedule, a lot of different things happening all at once. They really fit a lot into that small town hall. But before I give my thoughts about the overall vibe of this festival, I'm gonna throw to Ethan, who is the other person that went.
Yeah, she's pretty much covered everything. Like there was a lot of things you could do at the Japanese festival, and I was really surprised because I thought this was like just some like cheeky, wholesome, you know, local council kind of event. But no, it was like a massive event, and like apparently everyone from Melbourne and their mother and their dog rocked up to the festival, and it was a really huge outing, and there was a lot of things that they packed in there. Like, yeah, obviously like the food and the events and performances. It was very comprehensive. I remember there was like a literature room section, and they had like a little table of books that you could just take for free, like just a bunch of small Japanese books that you could just take and read if you read Japanese. It's like, you know, like a bonsai exhibit, like a train model exhibit with these older Japanese people just sitting behind it and showing it off. It was really cute. I'm going to toss over to Jessie to see what her opinions are, but also worth noting that she cosplayed because there was also a cosplay competition, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I did cosplay, and I will say walking into Box Hill Central from Box Hill Station and getting all the stares of all the older Asian people that just, they stare and they keep staring, and then you know how sometimes when people try to take photos discreetly, they put their phone to like their belly button area and they like look down and they like try to do it discreetly, and it's like I know I can see you trying to be discreet, but it's not discreet. I turned up at the place where the festival was being held, Box Hill Town Hall, and I think a good thing to note about this day in particular was that it was rainy, it was cloudy, and there was a lot of people at the event, and I was in cosplay and I had a prop. Not a good combination, I will say. So I turned up there and they had this cool thing where like if you were a cosplayer or if you wore a kimono, you could essentially go in for free. So you got to skip like the huge queue of people that needed to pay before they go in. Now, I'd say my experience is a bit different from Ethan. I think Ethan overall had a pretty positive experience exploring all the different areas and all the different places within the festival. But I just felt so overwhelmed by like all the crowding. Like you at times couldn't even move very much because there were just so many people kind of packed shoulder to shoulder. And since we were like carrying around props as well, we couldn't really easily squeeze into tight spaces or like make quick maneuvers and do that kind of thing within a crowd. And so I don't think I was able to really take full advantage of everything that they had to offer there. And now after like looking at everything they had, like I saw that they had a model train, but like I looked at it and I was like, that is a crowded room full of people. If I go in there, I don't know if I'm gonna make my way back out. So I am going to avoid that room. And as Ethan said before, the town hall is a lot of hallways and rooms and all that, but that also means that a lot of people are squeezing through hallways and different rooms, and it probably would have been better if it was like a big open room. Like they did have like the main performance area, which was also where the cosplay competition was held. That was like this big performance theater. But other than that space, all the other like performance areas were very like spread out. I think there was a room for like music performances, and then outside of the town hall, there was a little roped off area where people were doing like J-pop dances. We heard Idol being performed because obviously that is the trending song for J-pop dances right now. They had some weird placements, and I just felt that everything was a bit crowded because they were all in separate rooms. But yeah, overall, I still enjoyed it. I just think the wet weather made it even worse.
I guess you mentioned a lot of, like, perhaps the downsides and ways that this festival could be improved. But in your opinion, Jesse and Ethan, was there one particular stall or event they put on that you thought was, like, just super extra neat and was your highlight of the festival?
I can't say much because I wasn't really able to stay around to participate much in any one activity. But I did stick around to watch the cosplay competition, which was pretty interesting. Now, for a community event, I'd say their cosplay competition was run pretty well. Now, obviously, because it's not like a proper, like, professional cosplay competition, there was all sorts of people from all age groups, all skill levels, some that made their cosplay, some that bought their cosplay. There was a little kid that came up, and he was the only little kid that came up in, like, a little tundra outfit, and he was so cute. And yeah, I think the girl that won the cosplay competition in the end really did deserve it because she really made her entire outfit. But I guess that would be my highlight. Ethan, do you have anything to add?
I think just generally seeing, like, obviously there's a lot of Japanese people that showed up to the event and, like, participated in the event. But yeah, just seeing, like, the different cultural stuff from them. Like, there was a part where they would have, like, a Japanese school and they would kind of show off the artworks from the kids and stuff. I thought that was really wholesome and cute. And then the food section as well was so good.
There was a community radio station that had a table set up upstairs, I believe. And they were, like, asking people for, like, interviews and, like, little vox pops. I think they were, like, a Japanese show on that radio station. I believe that was.
I think it's 3ZZZ or triple Z. I don't know what it's called. I'm so sorry because they're actually, like, partnered with Sin. So we're supposed to know who they are. We get, like, emails asking if we want to get trading with them for culturally diverse or linguistically diverse people. So yeah, we should know who they are. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, we don't. We also don't know how to say their names. But 3ZZZ, or however you say it, was there, and they tried to speak to us in Japanese, which is really cute and wholesome, and I hope they have a better coverage of the event than we did.
Yeah.
Also on that, shout out to SBS Pop Asia. I saw a girl walking around with a mic. So whoever you are out there, congrats, you were there.
Now I kind of want to go next year to make the travel.
Yes, Alicia, let's go together.
Make the travel.
I think it's worth going. It's definitely worth going at least once because I was really surprised and overwhelmed by, like, how much was there. I can't say if I'd go again. I don't really know what I'd get out of a second visit, but, like, it's definitely worth going. And it was, like, $5 anyway, or free if you cosplay.
From the sounds of it, it just sounds like a really, like, true community event. Just, like, people who have a passion for, like, food or model trains or bonsai, like, these are literally, like, hobbyist groups as well, not just shops, and arts and crafts and that sort of thing, and cosplayers. Like, it sounds like a very authentic grassroots sort of enthusiast event, and I feel like that sort of thing is really rare. I feel like that sort of thing is, like, a figment of the past almost. Like, everything nowadays is super commercialized.
It is very much, like, community centric, which I think is something that we don't see enough of these days.
But yeah, we should play some more music. The next track is not by a Japanese artist. It is an artist from Taiwan, which was formerly a Japanese colony. But the band is called Yuhangren, or Cosmos People, and Mixer, which is another artist. And this song is called 你在哪里, or Where Are You? That was Singaporean singer-songwriter Alicia DC with If Only I Could, and for that, Taiwanese rock band Cosmos People with Where Are You? This is Asian Pop Nation on Sin, easing into the end of the show with some slower songs, as we tend to do. Tonight we talked about Asian touring acts coming to Melbourne, ticketing frustrations, Jesse going to a concert by the Chinese band Paisha Jaws, the upcoming Wicked musical movie directed by John Chu, and finally the Japanese festival that was recently held at Box Hill Town Hall. Unfortunately, the podcast doesn't include the songs we play, but they are playlisted on our Asian Pop Nation playlists account on Spotify. Follow us at Asian Pop Nation on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for updates. And thank you so, so much for joining our team tonight of Xenia, Jesse, Ethan, Leisha, Annabella, and me, Tracy. We're going to end the show on an enchanting little ballad. It reminds me a lot of Lei Fei, actually, and it sounds straight out of a Disney film. This is a collaboration between two Chinese artists, Wang Ok, who provides the gorgeous vocals, and Duke Lee, who plays the piano on this track, I believe. The song is called 在春天消失之前, or Before Spring Ends.
And with that, this installment of Asian Pop Nation draws to a close. Have a good night, everybody, and we'll see you next week.